Hey guys, welcome to the Anchored Hope podcast. I'm Pastor Mike, the lead pastor of Anchored Hope Church, and I hope that while you're listening today to our podcast, you can join us on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. at 211 Boone Street. We'd love to have you. We hope that this message is encouraging to you, and we hope that you can also join us at our location at 211 Boone Street. Also, check out our Facebook page and our website, www.anchoredhope.church. Well, we are going to head into part three of our series that we've been in called For Argument's Sake. And I don't know about you, but this series has stretched some of you quite a bit. It's very, very exciting. And what we've been talking about, if you're just joining us, if this is your first Sunday at Anchored Hope Church, we've been talking about the overload of information that we witness today. With the growing amount of social media, 24-hour news, all the different newspapers and articles that are emailed and mailed and sent to us today, there's an overload of information. It's been done. Universe did a study, and they predicted that there is 34 gigabytes of information going across our desk, our laptops, our computer screens every single day. Every single day, you are receiving 34 gigabytes a day of information. And that information overload is a lot. And if you've been a part of any of it, you know that with the growing amount of information, there are a growing number of debates with that information over politics and over agendas and over beliefs and over philosophies. And so what we've been talking about is how do we handle that overload of information? Because how we're handling it now just isn't healthy, isn't right, and it certainly isn't Christian. And so the very first week we talked about this. We talked about we have to have this posture. I don't know everything about anything. The best posture we could possibly have is the posture of humility. I have to be a humble person. I can't automatically throw all the information through my filters of my experiences, my upbringing, my beliefs. I have to begin with the posture of I'm open for conversations. I don't know everything about anything, so I'm up to hear anything that you have to say, and I'm up for any conversation that you might want to have. And then last week, in part two of our series, we talked about the difference between a soldier's mindset and a scout's mindset. A soldier has a side to defend. A soldier has a debate that they are trying to win. But we don't want to have a soldier's mindset. We instead want to have a different mindset. We want to have the mindset of a scout. And we talked about how Paul talked about how we should not ever stifle any conversation, any belief, any new idea. But instead, what we should do is we should have a scout's mindset. I'm curious. I'm after new information. I'm open to new information. I'm seeking the truth. And we should test everything that we hear. Every belief, every philosophy, every new method, every new theory, we should test it and we should keep what's good and we should reject what's evil. And we said this, we shouldn't discard what has potential with what is not essential. You can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. All these new ideas, all these new theories, all these new things that we're debating and we're rethinking, some of it may have some good in it. And so we can't just throw it off. We can't just throw the baby away with the bathwater. We can't discard with what has potential with what is non-essential. Now today, what I want to talk to you about in part three, and next week we're going to conclude this series, but in part three today, I want to talk to you about conformity. But before I do, I want to test you to see if you might possibly be a conformist. So here's the question I have for you, okay? Everybody knows the story, right? First comes love. Then comes marriage. But what comes before marriage? An engagement, right? But here's what I want to ask you. Why did you get engaged before you got married? Think about that for a minute. Why did you get engaged before you got married? Now, before you go to the answer that I know you're going to go to, well, because we had to plan a wedding. Now, let me just state that that doesn't count because you did not have to get engaged in order to plan a wedding. As a matter of fact, some of you started planning the wedding way before you were ever engaged. Why did you not just ask the question and then set a date and tell people, yeah, this is my boyfriend, this is my girlfriend, we're getting married. And we're getting married on such and such date. But you didn't do that, did you? You got engaged, and then that person became your fiancé, right? It's a fancy French word. This is my fiancé now, right? Sounds a lot cooler than girlfriend or boyfriend. But you became fiancés. So why did you get engaged. Let me ask you a better question. Do you even know the point of engagements? Let me give you a little bit of history, a little bit of real talk, okay? So back in the day where engagements were actually started, engagements are actually a biblical thing. Do you know who the first person was to get engaged? Abraham. Abraham got engaged, and so it became a Jewish tradition to get engaged. But what would happen during that time is engagements were a negotiation period. When you got engaged, it wasn't because that boy loved that girl or that girl loved that boy. It was an arranged kind of thing where it just kind of worked out for both families. And so they were arranged to be married. And then what would happen was is that the groom would go to the bride's family and say, okay, how much is this going to cost me? What do I need to do? How many goats are we talking about here? What do you want? You want some land? You want some sheep? You want some cows? What am I going to do to be able to buy this bride off of you? And so what happened is they would reach into an engagement period where they would engage in negotiation. And if that contract was broken, if that contract wasn't held up, if the groom's family couldn't hold up to their side of the deal, they would break off the engagement. It didn't matter if they were loving each other or not. That marriage was not going to happen. But the whole point of the engagement period was a negotiation period. Now, later on in medieval Europe, how this evolved is it became a trial period, where when you became engaged, you would move in together and you would try to have a baby. And if the bride could not become pregnant, then the marriage was called off. They're like, oh, well, she can't have kids. She's broken. I want another one. You know, so it was like a test drive period is what it was. That's how they used it in Middle Europe in the medieval days. Now, let me ask you, and men, you need to be really, really careful when you answer this question. Were you test driving your wife? Be careful. Be very, very careful. And were there any sort of negotiations or trading of heifers or calves or anything like that during the period while you were engaged? I don't think so. But that's where engagements, well, that's why they were created. That was the purpose of engagement. So again, I ask you, why did you become engaged? Now, we're going to get into some real tricky ground. Why, when you got engaged, did you put a ring on the girl's finger? And why, when you put the ring on the girl's finger, why was it a diamond ring? Why did you do that? Now, do you know the purpose of engagement rings? Again, something invented in medieval European times. What actually the purpose of an engagement ring was is that the soon-to-be bride, the fiancé, she was given two rings. She was given a gold ring and an iron ring. Now, the gold ring was for her to wear when she went to fancy parties. And it was a sign to tell people, buzz off. She's already belongs to somebody else. And she was only supposed to wear it to the fancy party. She wasn't allowed to wear it to anybody else. And then the iron ring was what she was supposed to wear at home to remind her that she was betrothed, she was taken, and she needed to behave herself. Sounds kind of like handcuffs to me. Now, again, men, I'm trying to help you out here. Let's be really, really careful. When you put a ring on her finger, were you claiming your property? Were you squatting like a dog on that fire hydrant? What in the world were you thinking when you put that ring on her finger? Because she's not your property. Now, let's get back to that diamond ring thing. Why did you put a diamond ring on it? Why didn't you put like a piece of like really, you know, bright neon like rope, you know, that glowed in the dark or something, you know? Or, you know, they got those rings. When I was in elementary school, I got engaged 6 times. It was real easy. I'd go to the pizza joint across the street from my dad's office. I'd put a quarter in, and I'd get those gold little 25-cent rings. I was engaging girls left and right. I mean, I had a posse. I think they call that a pimp now. But anyway, why did you put a diamond ring, though, on that girl's finger? Let me give you a little bit of history. They weren't always diamond rings. Actually, it's a kind of an interesting story. So what happened is in the 1880, there was a company, a specific company that actually ended up taking over most of the diamond business. They were able to facilitate and control 90% of the diamond mining. That happened. They were called De Beers Mining Company. And when the Great Depression hit, jewelry sales plummeted. They were awful. Nobody was buying jewelry during the Great Depression. And as they came out of the Great Depression, they needed to figure out a way out of this slump. So they got some together with some advertisers and some smart people, and they said, we need to bring us out of this. We need a slogan. And so they came up with this slogan that a diamond is forever. A diamond is a girl's best friend. And they encouraged men in their advertisements that it was necessary, that they had to spend 2 months' salary on a diamond. In the early 1940s, engagement rings became the leading line of jewelry in most department stores. Today, more than 90% of engagement rings are celebrated with a diamond, and they spend, get this, today, these children are spending an average of $6,000 on an engagement ring. Okay, hold on just a second, all right? Where did you even get $6,000? I don't even have that kind of money. My goodness, $6,000 on a diamond, on a ring, to be engaged to somebody. Now, again, I asked you the question, why did you do that? Why did you put a ring on her finger, and why in the world did you spend $6,000? And the answer is because girls got taste, and she told you that's what you had to spend. But why did you do it? Here's the truth. You did it because that's what everybody does, right? You did it just because that's what you assumed happened. When I want to get married, what's the formula? Well, from what I've seen everybody else do is you ask the girl the question, oh, you got to get down on one knee. Wait, let's back up. First, you got to ask dad's permission. Everybody remember that. Teenage men, remember this. Ask dad's permission first. Then you get the ring. Then you get down on one knee. Then you ask her. Then you get engaged, you plan a wedding, and then you get married, right? That's the formula that we all believe, that we all see, that most of us generally follow. But here's my question to you. Why have we never stopped and questioned this? Why have we never stopped and said, you know what? I don't know why we're doing it this way. Why don't we do it a different way? Why can't I do it differently than anybody else? What if I didn't get you an engagement ring? Would you still say yes? What if I didn't spend $6,000? Would you still say yes? Ladies, would you have still said yes? Some of you are going, no, I wouldn't have. It's all about the rock, right? But why? That's my point. Why? Now, let's think about this. Let's take this a little bit further. I want you to think of other things. Now that I've kind of popped your mind a little bit, I want you to think of other things that you might do just because that's what you see everybody do. If you think about it long enough, there are things all around us, things that we do all the time just because it's the flow of society, it's the flow of culture, because that's just what you do. See, the thing is that a lot of us naturally are conformist. And what we have to understand, just as we've talked about this entire series, is that the world is full of sides. You gotta understand this. The world is full of sides, and every side has an agenda. And with that agenda, everybody has something that they're trying to win. And in order for their agenda or their side to win, they need you. They need you to support them. They need you to buy into their agenda. And here's the thing. They need you to get your friends and your family and your kids to do it too. And so all the time, in this overload of information that we're taking in, we have to understand the truth that today there are sides who are investing a lot of time and a lot of money in order to try to get us to adopt their product, their idea, their philosophy, who are trying to get us to support them. And they will do whatever they can, as creatively as they can, to get us to buy into their agenda. They will try to bandwagon us, and they will try to tell us, hey, you need to do it because everybody's doing it. You're not cool unless you're doing this. This is the thing that you got to do because this is the thing that everybody's doing. And if they can't make it attractive to you, do you know what they'll do? They'll try to scare you into doing it. They'll try to tell you, you got to do this because if you don't, something terrible is going to happen to you. There's a word for this idea that I'm sharing with you right now. Does anybody know what it is before we put it on the screen? Anybody know what it is? Go ahead. It's propaganda. Literally, I just read you the definition of propaganda. When there are ideas that are shared in creative bandwagon type scenarios where people use fear as a motive to try to get you to adopt a new idea, a new philosophy, to pick up new actions and new habits in your life. Propaganda. And here's the scary thing. It's easy. We are not as independent as we think. We are naturally conformist. It's so easy to get us to go along with the crowd. It's so easy to get us to go along with what the bandwagon is doing. And if people can make it attractive enough, we'll buy into it. We'll invest in it. We'll support it. Now, you may be thinking, not me. I'm my own man. I make my own decisions. That's what I do. Well, let me show you a little video that might prove you otherwise. This is a little test done to show exactly how easy it is to get somebody to conform. Go ahead and show this video. Can you believe that? She just naturally conformed to what everybody's doing. And then everybody's gone, and she starts teaching everybody. It gets to a point in the video, there's 20 new people in there that are not actors, and she teaches everybody to do it, and they do it. We are naturally conformists. We naturally go with the crowd. We naturally identify as people who like patterns, who don't want to disrupt anything, who don't enjoy being different in any way. And this is why we're talking about this. We're talking about this because this is a huge problem. That we've got to understand that this overload of information that we're taking in, I mean, 24-hour news, you know, all the Facebook posts and the tweets and all of this stuff, there are companies, there are people out there who are very creatively trying to get you to do things. They're trying to get you to change your actions, trying to get you to adopt their beliefs. And you've got to be careful because it's very easy to conform to what everybody else is doing. And this is even such a danger that the Apostle Paul addressed this very problem. The Apostle Paul, he wrote a letter one day to Rome, which if you don't know anything about the history of Rome, at this point in time in Rome, Rome was the epicenter of culture and politics and philosophy and art. This is where all of the ideas were taught. This is where all of the philosophers lived. This is where the government told you what you were supposed to do and what you were supposed to believe. And so Paul, he writes the Christians of Rome this letter, and he addresses this known fact of what's going on. And it's very important for even where we are today. And this is the first thing he says in chapter 12, verse 2. He says, don't copy the behavior and customs of this world. Paul is saying this. There are sides. There are sides with agendas who will try to squeeze you into a particular mold. The world will always try to recruit you to be a soldier on their army, on their team, and you need to be very, very, very careful. Because all around you are new ideas and philosophies and people who are trying to get you to fit that certain mold, who are trying to get you to adopt certain beliefs. And they want you on their side, and they want you not only on their side, but they want you to mindlessly follow them and defend them wherever it is they may go. And Paul would say, don't ever, 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 ever let what you believe be something that is handed down to you by somebody else. Now, you need to investigate everything for yourself. Every new idea, every new information, every new theory. You do not just need to go along with it because somebody else said that it's okay to do or it's the right thing to do or it's what you should do. You need to investigate every single thing for yourself. And you should question everything and figure out if it's actually what you should do. Now, I'm going to do something that it can't leave the room, okay? Don't tell anybody that I said this or that we did this, okay? And this is only going to happen once. This is never going to happen again. So if you made it today or if you're watching on Facebook, this is a special moment right here because I'm going to give you special permission, but it can't leave this room. Are we all in agreement? Do you understand? Okay? Okay, here we go. You should never, ever, ever, ever believe anything that I say up here, okay? You should never, ever, ever, ever do anything because I told you that you should do it. Now, let me explain that, okay? If you ever run into a time where somebody questions something that you did and they say, you know, why did you do that? Why do you believe that? Why do you say that? Why do you do these things? And you say, well, because my pastor told me that I should. You have failed the test. You should never, ever, ever believe anything that I say. You should never, ever, ever do anything that I tell you to do. Now, some of you, you're blown away by this. The silence just proves it right there. Because some of you are going, but Michael, you're your pastor. I mean, if Mary Teresa and Captain America had a baby together, and then that baby had a baby with a little person, you would be the product of that family. I mean, Pastor, everything you say is gold to me. I mean, I write it all over my Facebook, my journal, my walls. I imprint it on my kids' heads. I have it tattooed on my back. Pastor, why would you say that? Because here's the thing. A lot of times people use this verse to say, don't do what that sinful world is doing. You shouldn't copy the behaviors of that world because the world is sinful. But here's been my question ever since I heard that verse when I was a teenager. How do I know what's sinful and not sinful? What exactly are you talking about? Now, the proper way to exegete this passage, the proper way to talk about what Paul is saying is Paul is talking about not the sinful behaviors or the sinful customs. He's saying don't copy anybody's behavior or anybody's customs in this world, which means any human being. You shouldn't copy anybody's behavior. Your ideas and your beliefs should never be something that is handed down to you. You should never allow yourself to be fit into somebody else's mold. You should for yourself decide what you believe and what you should do. You need to take everything that you hear from me, from your parents, from the world, from the government, from the people you trust most and the people you trust the least. You should take everything and you should test it for yourself. Paul is saying, don't let anybody ever tell you what to believe. Don't let anybody ever try to fit you into a mold. Because here's the thing, naturally, human beings are selfish people. And they all have agendas. And with that, that means that nobody can really be trusted. You need to test everything for yourself. You need to say, I believe this because I believe it. Not because I was told to believe it. Not because I was told to do it. You need to adopt it and own it for yourself. Because if you just say, well, my church told me to do it, or my pastor told me to do it, or I don't know why I do that. I just do that because my parents told me to do that. Then you are proving that you are a conformist. And you shouldn't conform to anything. You should own and adopt your own beliefs for yourself. So that's not saying don't listen to people. You should listen to everybody. You should have a scout's mindset because you don't know everything about anything. But you need to own it for yourself. Now, naturally, we would say to Paul, but Paul, how then do I know what's right or wrong? If the world is full of naturally sinful and selfish people who are always going to have a side, always going to have an agenda, always having a debate that they're trying to win, then how in the world could I ever know what's the right thing to do, what the right thing to believe, and what I should actually adopt and say is right? Well, Paul would say, that's a great question. I'm glad you asked. And he continues on and he says this. So here's what you need to do. Let God transform you into a new person. By what? By changing the way you think. Now, this is kind of a muddled translation in English. If you don't know, the New Testament letters that were compiled by the apostles, they were written in Greek. And so there's a Greek word here that would replace changing the way you think. And actually, a better translation for that word is this. You need a primary reference. Allow God, go to God, and let him change you into a new person by doing this, by giving you a new primary reference. That reference being God. Paul says, you're right, you can't trust everybody. So here's what you need to do. Everything that you hear, every information that you take in, every belief, every action, what you need to do is for yourself and to be able to own that for yourself, you need to take that to a primary reference. And that primary reference needs to be God. You need to take that to God and you need to test it against what God says, against what Jesus said, against what his word says, and you need to pray about it, you need to speak to the Holy Spirit about it, and you need to let God help you determine what the right thing to believe is, what the right thing to do is. You can't trust other people. You can't always believe always people. You can't believe every study, every article. What you need to do is you need to run everything through your primary reference, God. Everything needs to be taken to God. And then next, he says this. Oh, thank you for adding my Dr. Seuss. No, keep my Dr. Seuss up there. You're right. So I have a little Dr. Seuss rhyme to help you remember this. Let God be your preference for everything that you reference. God needs to be the one that you go to for everything that you run through your filters. And then Paul ends with this. We'll end this verse. So let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Let God be that primary reference. Then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing and perfect. Do you want to know what's good? You want to know what God's will is? You want to know what's perfect? You need to make God your primary preference for everything that you reference. Now, this word good and this word perfect, it's not, doesn't mean what you think. Let me give you the Greek translations of these words. It's going to be on the screen. What is good means virtuous. And once again, what is good is virtuous. That means it has to do with other people. When you go to God with new information and you say, God, I don't know what to do with this. I don't know what I need to believe. So will you help me filter through this? Will you be my primary reference? Will you help me to know what is good? What he's saying is, will you help me to know what's right to do in terms of my relationships with other people? Will you help me to know what is virtuous, what is honorable, what is true, what is respectable, what is worthy of a life worth living? Will you help me to know what is good, not just the right thing to do, but it's right to do by other people? And then you will know what is perfect. Do you know what perfect means? It means, the Greek translation for that word means the complete picture. See, here's the thing about every side, every article, every study, everybody has a side where they're very narrowly focused on a result in which they want to prove, a result they want everybody to adopt. And that's the thing. You can read article and study and thing after thing, but understand that each of those things are going to be narrowly focused on one outcome that that agenda has. But the great thing about God is God is all-encompassing. God is unwavering. God doesn't have an agenda but his own. And he created the world. He knows what is best. And so he shows us the complete picture. He shows us the full picture. He shows us the good that they see and the good that they see and the little bit of truth that's over here and what's really evil about this and the outcome. Because how many things do we read and we go, well, that sounds pretty good. That sounds pretty attractive. And everybody's doing it. I mean, sure, great. Socialism sounds like a good idea. To a small amount of people, right? I mean, you can make anything sound good. But the thing is that to know if it's actually good, to know if it's actually perfect, to actually know if it's God's will, you need the complete picture. You need an unbiased opinion. And the only reference that is unwavering, the other only reference that doesn't have an agenda is God. So Paul says everything that we do has to be taken to God. Everything we do has to be taken to him, and we have to ask God, God, what is it that I'm supposed to believe? What's the right? Will you help me to know what's virtuous? Would you help me to know what's honorable? Would you help me to know what's good? Will you show me your will for what I'm supposed to do, how I'm supposed to live, what's perfect? Will you give me the complete picture that I'm looking for? Now, I'm going to give you an example of my own life, okay? Now, before I do, because this is going to be hard. This is going to be hard for some of you, all right? So let's review our sermon really quick. First of all, okay, I don't know everything about anything, and you don't know everything about anything. We're both humble. None of us have anything figured out. We're all on the same term, okay? Second thing, you need to have a scout's mindset, okay? You don't have a side to defend or anything, so don't meet me at the door or send me an email this week telling me how wrong I am, okay? You don't have a side that you need to defend. It's okay. You are here as a scout today. You are curious, and as I talk, you're going to say, not that preacher boy has lost his mind, okay? You are going to have a scout's mindset today, and you're going to keep what's good. You're going to test it for yourself. You're going to keep what's good. You're going to reject what's evil. And here's the great thing. I just gave you permission to take what I say and throw it in the trash can, all right? So you're good. So I could say anything and go, you could get in the car and say, that pastor guy, he's so silly. He tells so many jokes. I don't believe anything he said, but I'm coming back next week, all right? So here's the deal. So about a year ago, I got in a debate with one of my friends. I grew up in a conservative home. So naturally, in a conservative, I think my parents, like, I've always voted Republican. I grew up in a naturally pro-life home. So I have a friend who's pro-choice, and I kind of just recently found out about it a year ago when we started talking about it. I don't know exactly how it came up, but anyway, we started talking about it. And so immediately, you know, I know everything there is to know about this topic, and they know everything there is to know about this topic, and our soldiers' mindsets automatically engage, and we are ready to do battle. And so I kind of get defensive, I even kind of get angry, and I say to my friend who's pro-choice, I said, I can't believe that you are pro-choice. I mean, that's murder, man. How can you believe that? And they go, are you kidding me? I mean, you're pro-life, and yeah, you want to save all the babies, but I mean, I'm guessing because you're a conservative, you believe in capital punishment, right? So, I mean, that's pretty much the murder of people who've already been captured, you know, and you just you think they need to be put to death. So you believe in capital punishment. So that's murder too. And of course, my soldier's mindset says, that's different. You're a baby murderer. I'm a murderer of bad guys. It's totally different, okay? And so we go back and forth. Nobody really wins. Kind of like what we see every day in the media, right? So anyway, we go our own ways, you know, like most debates do. And then I start to get into this sermon series a few months ago. And so I start to get in this sermon series, and I say, you know what? I'm going to start to test all of my beliefs, all of my philosophies, all of my beliefs, all of the things that I hold true to my heart, all the things that I grew up believing naturally in my home from politics and philosophies and theology and everything. And so I started to test everything against what God's word says, against what Jesus says was the greatest command, to love God and love my neighbor. To test everything against what I believe about the cross and the resurrection, that grace and mercy is limitless, that there is an abundance of second chances that everybody gets because of what Christ's blood did for us on the cross, and that redemption is available to anybody. And so I start to go through all of this, and one night in the kitchen, Kate and I are talking, and I said, Kate, I think God's starting to teach me some new things and change my mind about some old things. And she's like, well, that's great. Thanks for telling me. Thanks for catching up to everybody else. And I said, okay. So then, anyway, a couple months later, I go back to my friend and I said, hey, I want to talk to you about this whole pro-choice, pro-life thing again, okay? And he goes, oh, great. What do you want to debate about now? And I said, well, I wanted you to know I'm pro-life. He goes, yeah, I know. You're pro-life. I said, no. I'm really pro-life. Like, I went and talked about this with God and I thought about it and I wanted you to know I am pro-life, meaning I am for every life. I don't believe in capital punishment anymore. I believe that all life is sacred. And when I say all life is sacred, I mean it. I mean, I believe that all life is sacred. Every fetus, every baby, every kid, every teenager, every adult, from the one who is the most righteous to the one who has done the most heinous sin on the face of the planet. I believe we need to defend our families and our country, and I think that's okay, but I think if there's any way to spare life, that we should spare life, and that when we capture somebody, that I don't believe we should punish them by putting them to death. And he looked at me, and he said, well, what does that make you? Are you a Republican or are you a Democrat? Are you a conservative or are you a liberal? I said, I don't know. He goes, what do you mean you don't know? You have to pick a side. You can't tell me that you don't have a side. How are you going to vote? How are you going to do this? I said, I don't know. He said, no. You have to. So what does that make you? I said, you know what? I think it makes me a Christian. And that's all I'm worried about. I've taken this and I believe that this is God's will for how I'm supposed to think and what I'm supposed to believe. I've tested this against the greatest command and I think that in order for me to love God and love my neighbor, and even in that means love my enemy, this is what I have to believe, that anybody can be redeemed, that anybody, God's grace is sufficient and he can change anybody, and that there's still a chance as long as they're here on this earth. That's where I land right now. Now, that may change in the future, but I don't know. And he was really disturbed. He's like, well, I don't like that. And I said, well, I'm sorry, but that's what I believe. I'm for life. Now, you may hear that, and you may not believe the same thing. And that's okay. You don't have to believe what I believe. But here's what I can say, and you need to see if you can say this yourself. I can tell you that I believe what I believe because I've tested it for myself. Because I've gone to God and I've asked God, what is your will for my life? Not everybody's life, but what do you want me to believe? What do you want me to do? How do you want me as a parent, as a father, as a husband, as a pastor, as a leader? What is it you think is the right thing for me to do? What is good? What is perfect? What is virtuous? Will you show me the complete picture? Sides down, nobody cares. Show me the complete picture, and this is what God has told me. Now, heck, can you say that about everything you believe in your own life? Can you honestly say that you have taken everything that you believe, and it's not been handed to you, it's not been fed to you, it's not a mold that you've been fit in, it's not something your parents handed down to you, it's not something a pastor told you to believe. Can you say that about things you believe in your own life? If so, then that should give you confidence. You don't need to fight with anybody. You don't need to debate anybody. You don't need to prove anybody you're right because you have confidence because God told you that you're right. So you don't need to talk to anybody else about it, right? However, If there's something in your life that you can't say that about, if there's anything in your life that you don't know why you believe what you believe, you don't know why you do what you do, you don't know why you vote, you don't know why you support what you, why you support. If you haven't honestly taken it to God and put it against the commands of God, to put it against the beliefs and the theology of the cross and the resurrection and what Jesus came to represent, not what the Old Testament came to represent, what the New Covenant, what Jesus came to represent, if you haven't tested it against that, then you got some thinking to do. You got some studying to do. And you got some praying to do. Because I don't know everything about anything. But at least I can say I am testing things for myself. That I'm taking it to God. And I'm not buying into propaganda. But I'm listening to his voice and his spirit. And he's telling me his will for my life. And that's what I want you to do. I want you in everything to do this. To let God be your preference for everything that you reference. Because everything you believe needs to be thrown through him. Past your feelings, past your anger, past how you were brought up, past your religion, past anything else. God needs to be the preference that you always go to reference. And that is my prayer for you. Look, I tell people this all the time. People who disagree with me about stuff, you can disagree with me. You can disagree with my sermons. You don't need to leave our church because you believe something differently than I do. Look, if you're looking for a group of people that all believe the same thing that you do, that's really weird, okay? That's like conformity. Do you want everybody to be mind-washed or something? And let me tell you, you're never going to find it. You're not. The world is too small, okay? We all, it's a melting pot of beliefs and philosophies and theologies. And I tell people all the time, look, we can sit here and Anchored Hope is a place where we can agree to disagree. And we're not going to fight with each other. And we're not going to debate. That's not who we are. You can believe different things than I believe. You can, as long, do we only need to be clear on one thing? Two things. That Jesus died on the sin, on the cross for our sins. And that he was raised to life. That grace is for everybody. And it's unearnable. And the second thing is this. That the greatest command is to love God and love our neighbor. If you and I are on the same page about those two things, Anchored Hope is the church for you. Because that is undebatable. But everything else in between, it's okay. Because God's spirit talks to each of us differently. God's will for each of our lives can be a little bit different. That's okay. That's all right. And in a world that is on overload of information and beliefs, what we need right now is an attitude of humility, an attitude of love, an attitude of openness, but most of all, a people who are not just debating with one another, but who are taking their beliefs to God and truly asking him what his will is. Let me pray for you this morning. God, this morning, I thank you for your spirit being available to speak to us today. God, for your willingness to have conversations with us, to open our minds, to God, to guide us through life. You're not a God who has left us or abandoned us or who doesn't speak to us any longer, but God, you are a living God, and we believe that, and your spirit speaks to us today. And God, I pray for every single one of us that we would not be conformists, that we would not allow ourselves to be fit into any particular mold, that God, we would test everything for ourselves, that every belief, every action, everything that we would do, we would be able to articulate the why behind the what for ourselves, not just do things because we were told to, not do things just because everybody else was doing it, that we wouldn't just buy into the propaganda that's around us everywhere, but that God, everything that we believe, everything that we hear, we would take it to you and we would ask you, God, will you show me what your will is for my life? Will you guide my thoughts? Will you be my primary reference that trumps all over references? Will you guide me to what I'm supposed to do and what is best, what is most virtuous, and would you show me the complete picture so that, God, I know how to live my life, so that I know what's in your will, so that I know what's right by my neighbor, by my enemy, by my family, and by myself. God, will you help me do that so that I can live out your command to love God and love my neighbor? We pray these things in your name. Amen.
Thank you so much for joining us on our podcast today. We hope that you can make it to one of our Sunday morning experiences at 211 Boone Street at 10 a.m. Don't forget to check out our website, www.anchoredhope.church. You can also give online very easily and conveniently. We'd love to have your support on our mission to lead people to a growing relationship with Jesus.